Good afternoon and welcome to the Buckmaster Show, coming at you from the Green Thing Socolow Village Studio. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuadita Sun. It's Monday, October 14th. Bill's enjoying a couple of weeks off here, so you're stuck with the rest of us who are left behind. The show is live Monday through Friday at noon, and you can check out Bill's extensive archive of shows or the live stream at buckmastershow.com. Our first Monday one-on-one guest is the superintendent of the Sahuadita Unified School District. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be digging into what it means to say thank you with an author of a book on the subject. We're going to explain more of that at 12:30. We'd love to have you join the conversation. If you have any questions or comments, you can reach us at 520-790-2040. That's the Buckmaster Show live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The Monday one-on-one is presented, as always, by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985, specializing in custom frames and mirrors, wall art, picture framing, hanging services, and a lot more. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com, and you can find them on Facebook. I'd like to welcome to the show Dr. Manny Valenzuela. He is the superintendent of the Sahuadita Unified School District. Welcome, Dr. Valenzuela.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dan. It's been a while. It's always a pleasure to be back with you.
Very good. How long have you been in that role now?
Dan, thank you for setting the backdrop for my experience, as I'd like to call it, not my age. This is year number 15 as the superintendent of the Sahuadita Unified School District, and very proud and grateful. And given that I think the average tenure of an American public school superintendent is like 3 to 5 years, I feel very blessed.
Well, it's a great district, and you have helped build it into an even better one.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's terrific. Two of my children graduated from the district and are on to other things, and it was a really good experience for them. So we're going to go over a few things today, and the first one, I guess, is from mid-September. Your district, along with dozens of others from across the country, received threats, none of which panned out, but these sometimes were through emails or social media or whatever, but they were threats of violence against schools. We had it locally. You have to take them all seriously. What happened? And how did you guys handle it?
No, you know, Dan, as we sit here kind of nostalgically reminiscing on how long I've been around the community, and I would say in the profession, this is my 36th year. So kind of you get to that point where you kind of start to reflect a little bit. And, you know, safety's always been a top priority, because if kids aren't safe, nothing else really matters, right? But things have changed. And I say these events of the recent weeks really... One of the unique factors that was involved is kind of the online or the cybersecurity or the virtual presence, if you will, that we didn't deal with 20, 30 years mm-hmm. ago. And so in this particular case, there was an online threat. And of course, it's a whole new space, that whole online world and how people share and you know, put forth different pictures that then make their way very quickly to different places. Ours was actually a direct email that threatened harm to Sahuadita High School, and it gave specific dates. And of course, we take those extremely seriously. What's interesting is that some of these now have gotten to the point where the origins are even difficult to track down. Some mm-hmm. of them are on platforms that are offshore. And so, of course, we have a great relationship with the Sahuadita PD. I think they're still working on some of those. And they will not let it go, they've assured me, until they get to the bottom of it. But it makes for a lot more complexities. Of course, for us, our approach to it is we're going to do everything we can to address it from a tactical point of view. So we saw, obviously, a highly increased presence of law enforcement, but also some changes in procedures. You know, mm-hmm. we went through a situational move toward searching backpacks and clear backpacks, which has become more common. But, you know, safety is always on the radar screen. It's relentless. We're looking at physical environment. I think you all have done a very thorough job of covering some of the things we've done, including some of the physical improvements in consultation with law enforcement and with the support of our community. We've put in ballistic resistant glass, strategically positioned throughout the district at all of our schools. We also put in these brand new state-of-the-art security cameras with tremendous mm-hmm. capabilities, and it's all part of the complete complement, along with counselors, social workers, school resource officers, and an assessment protocol, just to do whatever we can on all sides to address safety.
Are you talking directly to students about these things when they happen? I know letters go home to the parents and all that type of stuff, but is anybody ever talking just frankly? Because we have had other incidents in the district and people have been arrested. And is there any discussion with the students? Do they understand the seriousness of it and that it really disrupts an educational environment?
Absolutely. You know, through our school resource officer program, a big part of that is education. So it is providing guidance lessons along with similar types of lessons from our school counselors and our social workers. We put on events, which I think you've covered. Mm-hmm. Like there's a big annual one for our region called Let's Talk. And we do. We address the educational aspect, the legal ramifications, also the medical and the physical ramifications of the choices that we make. The detrimental things that you could be doing in one moment now that could impact you for a long time. So, you know, education is a never-ending quest.
Well, and I mentioned disruption to schools, and after this latest incident, which you got the email over the weekend, on that Monday, you typically have fewer than 10% of the students call in absent. On that day, it was about 3 out of 4.
Yeah, it was... It was very sadly timed, not too far removed in proximity from the horrible shooting that did actually take
Sure.
place in Georgia. And it was also part of what seemed to be a broader pattern of some type of sharing of these threatening types of things. So it was kind of permeating the region, at least, if not the whole country. Parents are understandably concerned about these safety issues, and we certainly respect the decisions that they make. On our part, we left no stone unturned in terms of our response from a standpoint of security and the counseling support for our students, the vigilance, the visibility, to make sure that it was safe. And it was kind of sad that we had that many students out, and I'm glad that those numbers recovered rather quickly.
The backpacks you mentioned, some are clear, and I know some school districts require that, but actually for a day you allowed no backpacks on campus. Is that accurate?
I think it's accurate even beyond that to say we did that for a few days. And then again, this is kind of a dynamic process where you're always monitoring and adjusting. I think backpacks are now back. Yeah, for a few days we were checking them at the door.
Right.
And only allowing clear ones.
Is any chance of some of that becoming permanent then?
You know, the thing that, like I was alluded to earlier, safety is always in a state of flux because the world is changing. And sometimes these, you know, unfortunate situations do create cause for thought and reflection and adjustment. One of the things that you're aware of because you cover these events is that we try and do is engage our community. And I anticipate that we're due for another safety-related community conversation where these are relevant topics. They do involve student wellness. They do involve safety. Things like, well, what about, you know, you go to a University of Arizona football game, which I love to do, and you have to have clear backpacks in these events. So how does our community feel about that? It's not in our policy. This was an administrative decision based on the situation, but how do we feel about that? And how do our parents feel about it?
Back in the day, we had lockers. And you can see all sorts of problems with those because, you know, some students would almost treat them like apartments. It was like the only place in their life where this was just for me. And then you'd see Johnny and Janie kind of shacking up, you know, in a locker and such. And so it was really kind of the strange little community. But at some point it was determined that lockers are really, really a bad idea. Are they really a bad idea?
You know, one of the things that I'm grateful for that I take no credit for, but that I inherited here in Sahuadita, is that I walked in and I saw no lockers.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, it was a little problematic. Sometimes people said, you know, the books are so heavy, carry them around in your backpack. Now, with so much of the educational materials and resources being on your Chromebook, which we now have one-to-one for every student, it's not as big of a deal. And I'm really grateful because, like you said, it's another place where people can put stuff, and therefore it becomes another avenue of potential concern from a safety point of view. So I am glad that we have it the way we have it.
Yeah, there are all sorts of problems with lockers, trust me. The bullet-resistant glass, the more security on campus, fences, checks, et cetera, all of that hits the budget. And I think people don't think about that as much as they should, is that schools, school districts are spending a whole lot more on security than they've ever had to, and that means money that's not going into the classroom.
Well, and you're right. And a lot of these high-tech, highly involved, safety-related physical improvements are really expensive. I want to say the bullet-resistant glass coverings that we put all over the school district at all of the schools, I want to say that was about $1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably a little conservative, but I think it's pretty accurate. And we're, the only reason we have it is because our community told us that they would support it through the ballot box and through their support. Same with the cameras that are great resources, by the way. And the newer ones are even better than the last generation. So these are all tactical tools, but like you said, they do cost. And there's no doubt that, you know, money is a scarce commodity. It doesn't come
sure.
in infinite amounts. And if you pay for something, you take it away from something else.
Okay, very good. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. You can find Mona's on the northeastern corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's is open Tuesday through Sunday for breakfast and lunch. Don't head out there today. They're not open, but plan for tomorrow. Treat yourself to their one-of-a-kind pastries, including the famous Danish Kringle. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. Or go to buckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolow Village Studio. I'm Dan Scheer, and we will be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
On average, the Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Welcome back to the Monday One-on-One presented by Mohs Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at MohsGallery.com. And you can also find them on Facebook. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun. And we're all giving Bill a couple of weeks off here. So you've joined us in the middle of the Monday One-on-One interview with Dr. Manny Valenzuela from the Sahuarita Unified School District. Dr. Valenzuela, we've been talking about safety. We've been talking about budgets. Let's move on to a recent report that kind of made waves in education. In fact, it did, particularly here in Arizona. The research firm Consumer Affairs came out with a study last month on education. The state did not fare well in overall funding, some of the outcomes, teacher pay, ACT scores, graduation rates. I know we can pick apart these studies sometimes, but the fact is the state is struggling in certain areas. Would you agree with that?
You know, the state is struggling in certain areas, and I think this begs a conversation that has multiple facets and that people can debate and agree or disagree. The thing that I hope, I'm always in search, Dan, of common ground. The thing I hope that we can agree on is that education is a valuable investment in not just the sake of education for itself, but also in the quality of life in our state, in the attainment of workforce opportunities, and in the overall economic development of our community. You know, I look at, and I do that just because I like to geek out on some of these things, but every year when these things come out, the one I usually look at is Ed Week Research Trust, and I always just correlate. How do communities do versus their investment in education? And my conclusion is there is a positive correlation. It's not everything, but it is something. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at this particular one, I was looking at it a little bit more, and it talks about, I mean, it basically says that the correlation is with investment. It's the big thing, and it talks about access to higher education, graduation rates, lower class sizes. And it's true that those things correlate. The way I look at it in terms of my role as a superintendent is, what can we do as a local community? What can we do to take the original intent of public education, which is it's a local endeavor, and say, given what we have, how can we make it the best that it can be? And I think I'm really proud of our community and what our community has done, the trust they've placed in us through their investment in our overrides and our bonds, so that we can elevate that investment and not just investment for its own sake, but really to build the kind of programs educationally, in career and technical education, economically, that's going to drive a thriving environment where businesses can be more successful, where people can raise their families, and where the overall quality of life can be the best that it can possibly be in every regard.
I've really enjoyed seeing the district make these partnerships that you mentioned that are sending kids in direction maybe other than college, or maybe they don't need to go 4 years for whatever it is they want to do, but there are some real practical positions, jobs that they can land, a year or two out of college, but you're already starting to build those bridges.
You know, one thing that I've learned over the many years, Dan, is that we have to raise the bar for everybody. This thing that you and I got many, many years ago, because I know we're roughly about the same age, this diploma, mm-hmm. that by itself, it's important, but by itself, that's not going to cut it anymore. Mm-hmm. We have to raise the bar for everybody. Now, that doesn't mean everybody has to go to Harvard or to the University of Arizona, have a four-year degree or a doctorate degree. It does mean that everybody needs to pursue and achieve some kind of highly specialized educational ability and skill that will prepare them for the many great opportunities in today's thriving workforce, which is it's more complex. So one of the things you're referring to is dual enrollment. This is an opportunity to provide our high school students with a chance to get lots of college credit. I know lots is not a very sophisticated term, but we have 531 kids. So that's almost 30% of all of our high school students taking these classes, mostly through Pima Community College, and they're able to get multiple high school credits. We have students that have almost 2 years worth of college under their belt when they start, and whether they want to be a diesel mechanic, a plumber, an electrician, or a surgeon, they're starting off college with a head start. They've saved themselves and their families a significant amount of money. I think we all know the current tuition and the cost of a four-year degree, and that's in-state. So anything we can do to give students a head start is worthy, and I think it starts with an intentional mindset of trying to find common ground and build these programs together. So I'm grateful to Pima College and our local community, which sponsors a scholarship to support this Pima pipeline. We call it Pima First, Sahuarita Wins. And our students are embracing it, and I think it's for the greater good.
This dual enrollment is really a game changer for a lot of students. We have the newspaper up in Safford, the Eastern Arizona Courier, and they cover at least one high school where almost the entire graduating class, and they're pretty small, has already earned, as you said, nearly 2 years' worth of college credits by the time they're out of high school. This is just not something that, you know, we had seen back, certainly not back in our day. My granddaughter is a senior now at Cienega High School. She's not even on campus this year. She is at Pima the entire time. And that is something that for serious students, it really gives them a head start. But like you say, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go on to a four-year school.
It's about opening doors of opportunity for young people. And, you know, speaking of dual enrollment, I mean, it used to be like, again, to my point about having been around a very long time, I remember trying to kind of develop these types of initiatives because they made sense. And I would say on both of our sides, on the educator side, I'll own it. And I will also say on the Pima side, and I think they would own it too, that all we did was put up barriers for why we couldn't do this, certification barriers, accreditation barriers. And thankfully, we've broken down those barriers by talking, listening, and trying to find common ground together. We now have 30 of these courses, 30 classes where you can earn Pima credit and high school credit at the same time. 20 of those, by the way, are in highly specialized career and technical education fields. So it's about whatever you want to do. We want to raise the bar for you and help you get there and hopefully do it cheaper and better.
The trades, which really are looking for nice, solid people to go into them, the high schools have also stepped up in that area and preparing kids for jobs in construction or mining or whatever. And a lot of these, as I like to say with journalism, we make it look a lot easier than it actually is. And so there's a lot of training that goes into these. And again, you're giving these kids a push, whether it's auto repair or whatever, long before they're out of high school.
No, 100%. And, you know, another issue that we've got topics for many more shows, Dan. I hope you'll have me again sometime. But, you know, that we hadn't even talked about is just the general shift in demographics and the availability of qualified workforce. And so we've got to be even more intentional with the resources we have of helping young people make individual decisions about their goals, what they want to do, and early intervention, early support. We have a construction tech program and an automotive tech program that are preparing students for these jobs that are going to the Ford Qualified Training Program in auto. Our construction tech program just built a very beautiful, I might add, tiny home where they've learned all of these trades, the electronics, the plumbing, the framing, the roofing. And these are jobs that are available to students right now. They pay very well, and they open other doors of business ownership and entrepreneurship. I think that I get excited about it because even after all these years, education is really a tool of helping students realize their dreams. And it's a pretty exciting time to be in the business.
But let's keep the home fires burning here. Is it harder to get students to consider teaching as a career?
You know, it is. It's given some of these demographic shifts that we're talking about and just the sheer numbers. It is, I would say it's challenging to tap students to choose education as a career. And I will tell you, when I talk to our partners in the business sector, the people who are building our schools and facilities, or our law enforcement partners, it doesn't matter if it's public or private, everybody seems to be struggling to find really good people. Mm-hmm. I do think the unique challenges and demands, the rising complexities of schools, the politics of schools, for a myriad of reasons, it is more challenging. And I think our goal is to make the profession as inviting, as supportive, as positive as it can be. Yes, to be as good as we can be in terms of compensation and those bread and butter issues, and we are relentless in that. But, you know, I got to tell you, Dan, after 36 years, and it hasn't always been a bed of roses, but I have no regrets. And the satisfaction of seeing our students going to law school in Tennessee at Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. Our student now, another one, they just enrolled at the United States Air Force Academy. Mm-hmm. Our students doing incredible entrepreneurial things here. The rewards are beyond measure. And to try and close the gap of that, which has always been the case, with now the tangible parts of being an educator, it makes it worthwhile, and it makes it worth putting a shirt and tie on every day and coming to work.
Okay, very good. We have less than a minute, but I wanted to get a quick answer to this question. A couple weeks ago, I was a co-moderator for a candidates forum in the Catalina Foothills District. I was surprised to learn that about half their students in that district come from open enrollment. Is that a high number?
I would say it is, and I would say my colleagues there in Catalina Foothills would say that for several years, the demographics in that community have been not growing.
Right.
And it's a great place. And so to take advantage of the open enrollment opportunity, I'm not surprised at that number. I would say it's higher than most.
Okay.
I would say in our area, in our district, we have about 8%. So I
8%.
Think we have 530 out of our 6,300 students. And, you know, at the end of the day, that is the world we live in, where we need to be attractive to others to come to our district. And I'm grateful that we have a number of people from various areas that choose to come.
Very good. And our thanks to Dr. Manny Valenzuela from the Sahuarita Unified School District. Thanks for being with us.
It's always my pleasure. I'll look forward to seeing you around town and hopefully sometime soon here back on your show.
Very good. Just a reminder that our Monday one-on-one is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge. Find them at moesgallery.com. And on Facebook, this is the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolow Village Studio. Stick around. We got a lot more coming at you. Remember, you can reach us on the live line, made possible by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management at 790-2040. We will be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The extraordinary beauty and craftsmanship of Mexican artisans is yours at Clay and Cloth in Barrio Viejo, featuring gorgeous clay pottery sourced from southern Mexico, including Oaxaca, Puebla, Merida, and Hidalgo. Also discover amazing textiles you won't find anywhere else in Tucson. Clay and Cloth also has an incredible selection of new Dia de los Muertos merchandise. See the selection on Instagram at Mad Max the Dog Shop and visit Clay and Cloth. Open Tuesday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 310 South Convent, just south of Cushing.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
You are listening to The Buckmaster Show. Welcome back. I'm Dan Scheer, and Bill's taking a couple of weeks off. And I was just thinking, John, that he better get back soon. We have an election to report on. Yeah, don't want to do it all alone here. So it feels like the election that will never end. If it is time for you to get out of town for a while, and if you're looking for a great vacation spot, our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico would love to host you. That is just 3 hours east of Tucson. There's a lot to do in Silver City and Grant County, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, visiting the Cliff Dwellings National Monument, and a whole lot more. Just had a reporter from my newsroom head over there, and she and her husband had a great time. So I'm looking forward to getting over there to learn everything you need to know at southwestnewmexico.org. We now welcome, for the second half of our Monday show, Carew Papritz. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Great to be here, Dan. Thank you.
Ever been to Silver City?
Yes, I have.
And?
And I'm going there tomorrow.
Is that right?
No, I'm not. But I would love to.
I don't believe you. First time you've ever lied to me, I think. Carew is the author of The Legacy Letters, and he's done a whole lot more. And that book made quite a debut a few years back, but the effects are still being felt, and we're going to get into that a little bit more here in the second half of the half hour. So, but last time you were on the show, it was May, and you had your son with you, Cutter, who was just graduating from Walden Grove High School, and yes. We assume he made it.
He made it. He's safely ensconced at NAU now.
Very, very good. I was just up there a couple of weeks ago, so I got to see his new stomping grounds, I guess. Now, he's not in one of those dorms that had to be evacuated because of the bat infestation, correct?
No, that's right.
So he's good.
Yeah.
Okay. So you send the kids off to college, and everyone thinks about, gosh, Johnny, how you doing there with just this whole new life? But really, us parents are just kind of... Well, we have a tough adjustment, too.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
It seems like every time I call you, you're on the way up to Flagstaff. Do you miss him a little bit, or are you just a wimpy kind of dad, or
no,
what?
No, I don't want him texting me and telling him how much fun he's having and how cool it is up there. So I'm like, and I go, no, we're just going to go hiking for 5 days.
Very good. So he's adjusted then. That is terrific and a good young man, as I reminded him that in very short order, he will be paying my Social Security. So I'm all supportive of these kids we're sending to college.
Let's go.
So good for him. Yeah. So we're going to just talk about a couple of things going on around town, and I'm going to drop one on you today. I got a text over the weekend, and I just couldn't believe it. I showed up at an end of an era type of event today in Amado, which is the home of the Cow Palace. It's about a 100-year-old restaurant, but in 2018, it was hit by a flood, and it has been in litigation ever since. The place has pretty much been just kind of falling apart since then. So over 6 years, still battle going on with the owner and the state on certain issues, but this morning, they removed the crown from the Cow Palace. They actually took the cow off the roof.
No.
Absolutely.
No.
End of an era. This is the thing you see on I-19 driving south. Now, you can see the Longhorn Grill, which is right across the street, and the big horns, and people know about that. But the Cow Palace, you could clearly see that cow from the road. No more.
Dan, you cannot have apple pie without the apple. You cannot have baseball without the ball. You cannot have the NFL with
And you can't have the Cow Palace
without the cow.
No, and it's gone. And I will tell you this: the funniest thing is, I pull up expecting to see a crane, you really can't tell how big this thing is. And turns out that they don't need a crane because you could have lifted it off the roof single-handedly. I mean, it's fiberglass, it's hollow, of course, and it is really light. I saw a man pick it up quite easily up on the roof, and they just kind of lifted it down a couple of levels, and no more cow. And it has been put out to pasture at a nearby ranch where it will be kept as this kind of iconic figure of a motto there. So the real question is, how long has this been up on that roof? And the best guess is that the Cow Palace used to have a different name. It was owned by the Kinsley Ranch people. And in the mid-50s, the Cow Palace people bought it, and we think that's when the cow actually went up. And so we're going to just call it in the 70-year range. But there are people who have lived down there for decades, and it's all they've ever known, and now it's gone.
And it was, I think it was previously the Calf Palace.
It was.
And it grew up into the...
You know, you've been here longer than me, so I think you're serious. But this is now the second time you've lied to me. So, you know, I will tell you that it is. I went inside it also, and if you've ever been in a place, or if you ever had someone put a wet blanket on a really hot day just over your face, and you just feel it's very heavy, breathing, that's what it's like in there. It's been broken into many times. It's trashed. This once glorious place, which was the draw for stars, and they would take their photos, Whoopi Goldberg, John Wayne, all these stars who have done movies in Southern Arizona would come through there and have steak and enjoy themselves. And now that's all going away. They say by the end of the year it'll likely be torn down. That's not soon enough. I'll just tell you that. Because it's a really
hate to hear it.
Yeah, it is. It's a little bit of Americana here that's gone for our area. So one thing, though, that we hope is gone real soon is the train derailment. You called me on Friday and said, gosh, what's this stuff going on? We had all these emergency vehicles staged about 2 miles north of a train derailment in Green Valley, and 24 cars, and I was getting some calls and texts and whatnot over the weekend, people saying, wait a minute, there's like a cloud of something above the wreck. And so we're trying to track that down. We think it was just cement, which is different than concrete, by the way, folks, and just kind of floating up as they're trying to remove these rail cars. But 24, sulfuric acid. They say they stopped the leak pretty good. The water and the air are going to be okay, but we're still checking on it. It was a reminder to me that the railroads really own the country, because they can do what they want when they want, and if they're going to block that road with a big rail cars, that's just the way it's going to be. You're just going to have to live with it.
I was stunned when you told me that, because I mean that derailment was literally a mile and a half from where we live.
Yeah,
and you know, nothing's going out on the news, nothing's happening, right, except the real news, which is Green Valley news, and it went out that way. But
we were on this, and I actually sent a reporter down to where we kind of thought it was. Actually, people at the staging site said, you know what, we're not even sure exactly where this is. They told us just to be here. Some of them knew, some of them didn't, but we finally got word from someone on social media who thought she could see it through binoculars, headed down that way. One of my reporters traipsed through grass, and eventually found the wreck, took some shots, turned and ran away, as we are wont to do when we're in places we shouldn't be. But you know, that old, ask forgiveness rather than permission type thing. And then we were able to, you know, kind of pinpoint it and see. They had initially told us that if there were going to be evacuations, there were 33 homes that they had pinpointed. Yours might have been one of them. So glad that didn't end up worse than it is, but we're still reporting on it. We'll see what happens.
Yep.
So, you know, who says it's a sleepy little town?
I don't. I'm on the phone every day with you.
Yeah, exactly. What's going on now? So we have a lot of stuff. I should mention also, just as a little more, Bill loves to break news on his show, that we had an email this morning from the recorder's office explaining why some of these early ballots that have been mailed are not on people's tabletops just yet. And the reason is, and a lot of people have received them, but the reason is that they had a little a mapping glitch. And what happened was that they had, it's in our area, a lot of the Continental School voters were accidentally put into the Sarita Unified School District rolls. And but they kind of hit the pause button for everybody just to make sure those ballots were okay. So when you get your ballot, it might be a day or two later. They should have them all mailed out by tomorrow, but it will be correct. So don't worry about that. But that was from the recorder's office just earlier today. So you're going to be glad when this whole thing's over, this election?
Yeah, you and I both.
Okay, we are going to take
I shower nightly.
I told my wife the other night, I said, look, I should have put the word out earlier that any radio or TV commercial you hear politically about the election or any of those cards you get in the mail, they're all lies. They're all lies, they're obfuscations, they're deceptions. Take them and just throw them away and don't listen to the other stuff, because truly it is.
Yeah.
It's just same old.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, little tired of it.
Mudslinging, you know, United.
Where'd we be without the mud? A lot of the radio and TV stations love it. Lots and lots of money coming in for them. But, boy, at what price? So big election, though. Okay, we are going to take a quick break. This is the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Sokolo Village Studio with our guest, Karoo Peppritz. He's the author of The Legacy Letters, and we're going to be talking about that when we come back. I'm going to actually let him get a word in edgewise. And please join us on the live line, made possible by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
In 2006, Pima County voters approved the Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year Regional Transportation Plan and half-cent sales tax. They are both effective through June 30th, 2026. For the region to receive continued funding for another 20 years, the RTA is developing a new plan and tax extension for voter consideration. Public input will be key. To receive updates on a new 20-year plan in development, visit rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities, The News and Suns media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Green Things is on a beautiful 13-acre site that's also home to Socolo Village and all of their fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things on River Road, just west of Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsaz.com and SocoloVillage.com. We're heading into our final segment here with Carew Papritz. He is the author of The Legacy Letters. And as I mentioned earlier, Carew, that really made a splash when you released that book, and it hasn't ended. So tell us a little bit about the book. Just give us some history and what's happened and then what's coming up next month.
Yeah, real quick to all the listeners out there, The Legacy Letters is a series of fictional letters written by a father who had never lived to see his kids. And these letters become their practical, moral, and spiritual guidebook for the rest of their lives. And they decided they want to share 50 of the over 200 letters the father left behind. And so they're everything from, you know, how to drive a car, how to fall in love, how to take care of cows, how to, you know, the full gamut of things in life that someone wants to pass on is their lifelong legacy of wisdom and learning. So I've been very, very fortunate to have been be able to do book signings all over the United States and other parts of the world. But as a consequence of that book, I've also been able to do unusual things such as do book signings on top of glaciers and on top of horses going into Barnes and Noble and on whistle stop tours along the East Coast on Amtrak. And people say, well, why do you do these things? Because the central theme of the book is to live life for the to the fullest. And I try to exemplify that by walking my talk.
There you go. You were in Cuba also, as
yeah.
I recall.
Oh, that was something.
Signing books in Cuba. That's great. I think it's the only English language bookstore there or something.
Yeah, where that's were. Exactly yeah. what it was. Yeah. yeah. And my Spanish was not impeccable.
No bueno, huh? No. Okay. Oh, man. Well, the book has an important message, and it's resonated, obviously, with people for various reasons. And really, though, again, as I said, it hasn't ended. Tell us about it. What's going on next month?
Next month, well, this is an interesting story. One of the letters, one of the early letters on is this, how to say please and thank you. And you go, oh, my gosh, what's that all about? But guess what? He wants to pass on this. The father wants to pass on this idea of civility and gratitude and whatnot. So I was actually helping teach a handwriting course at our local elementary, Continental Elementary, which is 108 years old, I think, now.
Cursive?
Yes, cursive.
Good
yeah.
grief.
Yeah, can
okay.
you believe it?
That how old are these kids?
These are the kids, obviously, fourth graders at the
wow.
time.
Wow.
Yeah, so my son was part of that class. And as I was doing that on the whiteboard and looked at their faces and they're all falling asleep, I said, you know what? What if we wrote a thank you letter the size of a football field? And they were all, oh, Mr. Papritz, oh, my gosh, this is a great. And I just thought, oh, that's a great idea. Not. I said, what am I? What? And so now we've started that. Well, guess what? We ended up doing it. It ended up being the size of a high school basketball gym.
Uh-huh.
And we created the world's largest envelope and the world's largest stamp. Because what do you do with the world's largest handwritten letter?
Got to mail it.
You got to mail it. Hand stamped it. We did it. We got a Guinness World Record. We're on the Kelly Clarkson show, so on and so forth. But what's really, really neat is that the basic values of a handwritten thank you letter are kindness and manners, civility and gratitude. These are the four values within that. And people say, well, why should I write thank you letters anymore? And I say to them, well, guess what? It's when you write a thank you letter, you're actually putting yourself into the paper. It's the time you take that you put into that paper. When someone receives it, you are actually giving them the gift of time, the gift of your time on this planet. So how cool is that? So I'm going to say to all our listeners out here, let's try something.
Okay. Got a challenge here.
We got a challenge. Writing a thank you letter. Now you go, oh, well, I didn't receive a present. No. How about this? Write a thank you letter to someone in your past, a teacher, a mentor, a friend who did so much for you. literally one sheet of paper, three paragraphs, handwrite it. I know handwrite doesn't care. It doesn't matter that they can't read it.
Absolutely.
The fact that they would receive that and say thank you for whatever they did. And I've done that. And it is remarkable to receive that. What a gift.
It is gives new meaning to that that phrase, it's the thought that counts. To just receive that, regardless of what it says, is going to be a treat to them.
Yeah.
So we did this years ago when I was up at the Arizona Republic and had a column, and I said, look, find out where your one of your favorite teachers is, write a letter, and get it done. And I heard back from so many people and the teachers, and it was just really, it was more than a day brightener. It was really for the teachers' validation that what they had poured their heart and souls into mm-hmm. had paid off. To hear from students, you know, beyond the age of 18, to hear what they were doing now in their 20s, 30s, 40s was really a big deal.
Yeah, so. And Dan, I think the other part of it too is, you know, people say, oh, this is old-fashioned. You know what? I would counter, it is timeless. It is absolutely timeless. And for parents out there, if you do this in front of your kids and show them what it's like to write a thank you letter, wow, that gift will keep on giving the rest of their lives.
So did you, you had Cutter, your son, yeah. write thank you letters, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
And what if he just wanted to text someone and say, thanks for the present, Grandma?
And we've had that discussion.
It didn't go over well, I'm assuming, given your background.
Why? Oh, I love that. Why do I have to? Oh, well, let me explain. Let me count the ways that it's not appropriate.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. And you just drag him kicking and screaming into writing this. I go, watch how easy this is. You just get a piece of paper, write a paragraph, thank you, couple little notes, and they receive it, and they will put a smile on your face, and they will save that, put it on the fridge,
yep.
And it will be, you'll be remembered for all the Christmases thereafter. So.
And a text is just not remembered, and certainly not saved,
no.
And it just kind of goes away. You know, as you talk about these things, it reminds me of letters to the editor, because I still get handwritten letters to the editor from the Green Valley crowd. They love it. And you can tell that something that is handwritten on a piece of paper, so much more thought goes into it versus typing, versus using a computer, versus emailing, versus some people have even texted me letters there. And you can tell that the progression there, that the more techie it gets, the less thought that's put into it. And it's more shoot from the hip and probably isn't going to see the light of day in our newspaper.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, there's a funny thing. So every year I go to the school and talk about Valentine's Day letters and cards mm-hmm. and whatnot. And I remember doing this in one class and I was saying, well, how many of you would like to receive a Valentine's text or a Valentine's letter? How about you? How about you, ladies? And all the girls in the class were like, we want to receive a letter. And I was like, wow, and the guys are looking around. So at the end of the class, it was over. And I said, well, did anybody have any questions about anything? And this kid in the back of the class raises his hand. He goes, Mr. Papritz, when can we start learning how to write these letters? I go, kid caught on. Oh, it was brilliant.
He'll have a good marriage. But what if the same kids, we only have about a minute here, what if the same kid uses AI to write a letter? That's a new thing here. Is it acceptable?
A what?
That's a no.
That is a N-O. There's an exclamation point or whatever you want to put it. No. That is the cheat of cheats. Please, people. I know. It's the work. Guess what? The work you put into it, people, get it. Use AI. It'll sound so not like you.
Okay.
Right?
And we don't want that.
No.
And it doesn't have to be beautiful. It just has to be you.
Perfectly.
Very good. So National Thank You Letter Day is coming up.
November 14th. National Thank You Letter Month, the entire month of November.
You got a month to do it, folks. This isn't asking too much.
No. Oh, so. And nationalthankyouletterday.com. Take a look at there. All sorts of good stuff on there.
Okay, so what on there is going to help me?
There's a downloadable PDF that sort of shows you all this interesting things you can do as an educator, as a parent, sort of things you can show your kids what to do. And there's that really fun video to watch the giant letter being made and all that stuff. Oh, it's
right,
great.
Right, yeah. Right. And just briefly, Guinness Book of World Records.
Yes.
You made it.
We made it. Hallelujah. Continental Elementary School is on the map for here on out.
Because of that letter.
You got it.
Very good. Well, our thanks to you, Karu Papritz. Tell our listeners where they can learn more about your book, The Legacy Letters.
Yeah, legacyletters.com.
Very good. It's an important message. On behalf of the team here at the Buckmaster Show, and especially my friend John Couch, managing things from the control room, and producer Rosemary Brandt, you have a great rest of your Monday.